So we've got an exclusive true crime interview today with a member of a legendary family out of London. And if you've not heard of Roy Shaw and Gary Shaw, we're talking up there with the craze. So don't need to say much more than that, than just to thank Gary for coming all this way today and coming on.
Yeah, it's no problem.
Yeah. Do you want to tell the viewers, we've got a lot of viewers in America as well, just what it was like growing up for you in the family?
Well, growing up, as I say, he got put away. He got 15 years for armed robbery in 63. And he got put away, I think it was about 2 or 3 days after I was born. So I never really grew up with him. But all I was told was he worked for the Queen. So, you know, anyone asked at school, yeah, my dad works for the Queen. I didn't know he was like sat sewing mail bags and whatever. But, you know, that's what it was. I didn't really get the gist of it until we got out. And then we always had police coming around our house trying to asking me mum questions about things and, just harassment, general harassment, really, you know, trying to find out where his money was or whatever, or if they knew where so-and-so was and whatever. You know, but yeah, but basically growing up, I never really, till he got out of prison, I never really understood who he was or what he was.
And how did that realisation set in then?
Me and my sister, we grew up, we took, like, my mum was Maltese. She never hardly spoke any English. We had a free rein, what we'd done, we was out shoplifting and just being little rascals, basically. You know, when he come out and he never lived with us, but he come out and we started seeing him. And then he started instilling his, like, bits of discipline on us. And a few morals and, you know, a bit of how to treat people, about respect and whatever.
Yeah. So was Roy bullied?
Apparently he was bullied at school. Because, like me, I was tiny when I was young. I'm not tall now, but... So he was the same sort of stamp as me, very small, never really grew until he was about 18, 19, and the same as what I was. He was bullied, but he could whack, he could punch. So
how did he become such a good fighter?
Well, I don't know. It's a natural thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can be taught to box or whatever, but to be able to fight is a different thing altogether, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got that inherent skill. There's a few people that Jamie's been, was it Sykes?
Mm.
He was from that era, wasn't he, as well?
Yeah.
There was a few others.
Don McLean.
Weren't he a singer? Or Lenny McLean?
Lenny McLean, yeah.
Well, it was on Cracker Jack, wasn't it? Don McLean, wasn't it? Is that
the one? Yeah, yeah.
Cracker Jack, remember that? Yeah. I've heard that word in ages.
Yeah, we're sharing our age now, aren't we?
Bloody hell. Half of them are in prison, though, aren't they? They're from the programmes we used to watch.
Yeah.
Rolf Harris.
Rolf, yeah, well. Jimmy, oh, he's dead, isn't he? Fucking hell, yeah. All right, so I've been watching all these videos then about Roy on YouTube and just... Are you all right to run, especially the American viewers, through the Malta story? Because I found that just absolutely fascinating. Why he was there and what happened?
Yeah. Well, he was out drinking with my mother, and the Maltese people are very religious, strict Catholics. And there's a few things you can say and you can't say in Malta, and you can't disrespect like the Madonna or Jesus or anything like that. So he was in a bar and he's got a drink and he's got this drink and he's threw it over the Virgin Mary. and the actual words which says, Ha al Madonna. And so now that's it, they've all turned on him. So he's had to get out and they was cowered up and there was all people coming up fighting with him and he was fighting here, left, right and centre. The police come and... They split him off. Then he went back in the bar, and there was the big old man of Malta. He was in there. He thought, well, it's going to come on top here. So what he done? He sent me mum home, and he to keep face, he stayed in the bar. So he, Filippo kept buying him drinks. So he'll drink two, then he'll go in the toilet and make himself sick because he thought that, you know, as soon as they're going to get him drunk, they're going to beat him up. And this went on all night. And then, but like they become good friends after that. You know, so, you know, I think, well, he died a few years ago, but his sons are now still in Malta now, so.
Yeah. Have you got any other stories of things that happened like that?
Well, there's a few tales, but I can't really tell them. But,
really?
Yeah.
Don't incriminate that.
No. Even though he's dead, some people are still alive, so. No, I've got stories about him, whereas things he used to get up to, and that.
Yeah.
But he was very well endowed. And it was one bank holiday Monday, and we was at the Epping Forest Country Club, and he's come out of the changing rooms, and it was me and my sister and my wife, we was all there, and he's come out of the changing rooms, and he's got this pair of cycling shorts on. You know, the really tight lycra ones?
Yeah.
And he's like, it's hanging down his leg.
Looking like Linford Christie.
And, well, no, Linford Christie would be jealous. You know? honestly, I'll take after me mother.
Yeah.
But as I say, he's come out and, oh, God, no. Like, and I was like fluorescent, like yellowy sort of. My sister's gone, Dad, you can't come out with him. He's saying, what? What's wrong with him? Because he was a fit man. He,
yeah.
Like, I'm going back, it's got to be like 30 years. And he was like, fit, very fit, well built, you know. And if it wasn't for the fact that he had this huge man member, like, it would have, you know, it wouldn't have been too bad. He would have carried it off. But it was just, that was like embarrassing. It was like, that was one of them. But, you know, he went home, he got changed. You know, got another pair of shorts, and that was that. But
probably hard to have a conversation because you just keep on looking at that, wouldn't you? It's one of those things that sticks in your head, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Well, say he's scanning urinals with him, and people staring there, and what it'd slap the side of the urinal, and then it'll just pull around and just go like that, and people
doing windmills.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Jamie sent in some questions to ask you. He said that Roy's dad died when he was only 10. He flung himself on top of the coffin as it was going down. And how huge an issue in his life was this for him to deal with?
Well, I don't know, because I never spoke to my dad about that. It was something that he never really spoke to me about. So yeah. I can't really comment on it.
Okay. So Roy began boxing just after his dad died and went on to do great things. You've already said that he was a natural fighter. He left school, realised he wasn't going to get a 9-to-5 job, so he began his blags, which included armed robberies. Was that when he turned into a professional criminal?
One of my uncles, he was a bit of a rascal. And my dad, when he left school, he was working in a woodyard. He's humping wood around, this, that and the other. And, like, my Uncle Terry used to come out and he used to be, like, all suited and booted, all the nice stuff. And, like, my dad said, well, how'd you get that? He said, come do a bit of work with us. And that's what he'd done. That's how he started. And, you know, started off little blags, post offices, you know, then they evolved into security vans and banks and whatever.
And how old were you at that point?
How old was I?
Yeah.
I wasn't born.
You wasn't even born yet.
No, that was... early 60s, well, late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah.
You know, from late 50s, he was in and out, and then, like, ball stall, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And how did he build his association with other crime families?
I don't know. I think with London and everything, because it was so close-knit, not like it is now. There's so many people there. But everyone knew everyone there, and stories, I don't know, like Chinese whispers or whatever. Stories would be said in one place, and then it'd get over to the other side of London. And then in between that time of it going over to London, that story's increased tenfold. Like, so and so knocked out one bloke, you know. But by the time it gets to, like, South London, he
took the whole pub on.
Yeah, he took the whole pub on, and their mothers, you know, that sort of thing.
So was he a lone wolf, or was he putting work in for the families?
No, he was. He's always been on his own. He's always floated with, you know, he's been friends with everyone.
Yeah.
He's fallen out with lots of people. I've got some of these on these tapes that I've got. There's some good stories there. What are in his words? We're going to have to edit some of them.
Yeah.
To like for the names and whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, there's some really good stories with big families and whatever.
So what's the tapes?
Well, basically there is tapes in his words. What he spoke when he was writing another book, when he was writing his book, their tapes were never got not listened to.
Yeah.
So basically, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Are there any of those stories that you've listened to that you can say today?
Not really.
You got to keep that for.
No, I put a clip on Facebook the other day about he was talking about Frankie Fraser when they had the Ghastly Riots, and it was just a brief clip of, you know, what happened. They found him in a strong box, so they kicked through the roof,
yeah,
took him down a cup of coffee and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just a little taster.
Yeah.
More to come of.
Well, people watching this will want to find your Facebook, and below the video, we're going to put all of your links.
Mm.
So what is the Facebook page called?
Yeah, we've got Roy Shaw RIP.
Yeah.
And that's where all the clips and that go on.
Okay, so if you're watching, viewers, go and check that out on Roy Shaw RIP. All right, so the next one that Jamie sent in. Roy would spend many years locked away in some of the most dangerous prisons. He was Cat A, which is Supermax for the Americans, for 8 years, and was deemed to be one of the most powerful and dangerous men in the prison system. Do you have any stories of your dad's antics in the various jails?
Yeah, I can't remember what prison it was, but he actually punched the door of the hinges. He's the only person who ever, he just smashed the door off its hinges.
I've seen that on a video.
They was going to make a film and the scripts were writ and they kept putting it down as a wooden door. They went through about six or seven script writers because they wouldn't put down the true story of him smashing down the prison door.
They're not going to have a wooden door in prison, are they? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. You know, unless it was a cupboard or something. Lock him in a cupboard. That was one of them. And screws. He used to like whacking a screw. If screws were like beating up on someone, he'll join in and take out the screws.
Do you know what motivated him to bang the door in?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But it was easy. He wasn't hard to upset.
Yeah.
I was in a place called Glen Parva, 1982. He came up to visit me. He came up with my sister and his then girlfriend, Dorothy. There you got a 2-hour visit. Now, I can't remember, I think the visiting started at 1 o'clock. So at 3 o'clock, they come to my cell. Well, about 10 to 3, they come to my cell and got me. And she's got a visit. I thought it was a bit late. So I went down and said, left it a bit late. He said, we've been sitting outside since half past 12. So they've kept him waiting. So I said, okay, right. So we sat there. I had my 2-hour visit. They kept coming up going, can you go? Because it was all the screws from when he was in, because he was 82. So it was a lot of them were still in the system and they all knew him. So we sat there I had my 2 hours and everything. And then, I'm so sure, blah, blah. He went. So I went straight down the block. Missed me tea and everything. Governor's on the Monday morning. I explained to him what happened, but I still got like 2 weeks loss of remission.
Wow. So, when he was in the Cat A prisons, was he in various ones?
I think he's been practically in every prison in the country at the time.
Yeah.
You know, so Broadmoor, he spent like 4 or 5 years in there. So.
And were you visiting him in Broadmoor?
Yeah, visited him. That was quite an experience. I used to enjoy going there because it was like, had big gardens and it was a huge, impressive building.
Mm.
You know, it was it was like a country park. All the lawns laid beautifully, planted out with beautiful flowers and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but then. Yeah, and there wasn't screws. They was nurses. So nah. that was a big difference. It didn't seem official.
What high profile prisoners were in the visitation there?
Oh, it was all sorts in there, murderers and child molesters. There was a young boy in there. Well, say it was a young boy, he was about 18, 19, but he was poisoning people with tea. Poisoner. He killed loads of people, killed his family and whatever.
Jesus.
Yeah, no. So there was, you know, plenty of strange ones in there.
Was one of the crazy in there around that time?
Not when we was there. Not when my dad was there.
Yeah.
You know, that was I don't think they was there till late 60s, early 70s. Well, until they died, didn't they? So
it's like a mental facility, is it? But it's a maximum security mental facility.
What they used to do, they used to have the light for people with mental illness.
Yeah.
And people they couldn't control.
Yeah.
But same in the first 2 years of my dad getting his 15, he lost all his remission. So basically, they cut him off there. He would have still probably been in there. He would have died in there probably.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for a few people pulling a few strings and got him back out into the mainstream prisons.
He got
a bit of remission back, and he got out. I think it done 10, 12 years. So.
You have a good side and downside then, prisons, because the good side is, you're right, the nurses, and it's not really like a prison, but the downside is they have the power to keep you for as long as they want.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Yeah, it's the same with this, like HMPs and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, what's the new one they call it now?
The IPP thing.
Yeah, the IPP, but we can't get out. You know, it's terrible.
It's mad, isn't it?
No, a very close friend of mine, her son.
Lead interview, and you're standing on the cable like a thug. I do apologise about this.
Please keep this in for the viewers' amusement. You're out there now on Front Street, Dave. Chesting, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, bollocks. Okay, so you were just describing then.
Yeah, no, as I say, a very good friend of mine, her son, he's got an IPP. He's been in there. He went in as a young fella. He had a silly fight. No one was seriously hurt, obviously, but they three and out, so they banged him away, and he's got no chance of parole at the minute or nothing.
It's terrible, you know? I think it's wrong. I think
it's torture.
Gives him nothing to look forward to, does it?
Well, not when you've got the likes of these people. They go out, they molest kids, and then they're out in like 2-3 years. You know.
On this channel, we're calling for an end to the war on drugs and a beginning to the war on paedophiles.
Yeah.
Instead of the cops putting all these resources into just shaking kids down for weed and telling us they can't go after the political paedophiles, they haven't got the resources.
I say death to all paedophiles.
It's all upside down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Completely upside down.
A good friend of mine, he does a lot of work for the underprivileged black children around East London and that, and the gangs and that.
Yeah.
And some of the stories he's told me, it's horrendous and frightening. 13 or 14-year-olds, they go around and they stab. What they do, they stab another one up the jacksie, so they have to have a bag. So, you know, just for a bit of a reputation, and all through drugs wars and whatever.
Yeah, if they decriminalised it and the government took over, they wouldn't all be fighting over the illegal black market.
Well, knives and guns, God give you them. You know what I mean? If you're going to have a beef with someone, use your hands.
And one of our very first podcast guests, he was IPP, and he was doing activism against IPP, and he pissed off a governor or someone high up in the prison service, so they recalled him. So he's back in now indefinitely, and he's got some hearing coming up in a few months, but we're all just like praying that he's going to not get back out again, because he's a good guy.
Yeah, I was there, someone put me onto a young fella the other day, Ben. He rang me up. He's just got out. He's just done a 10.
Yeah,
he's done a bit of time in Broadmoor, so we had a chat, and you know, he's got into the boxing now.
Yeah,
so we had a chat about getting into boxing, and like this is through my mate Alan, and so hopefully they're doing a documentary on him, so that'll be on the telly, so that'll be a good interesting thing to follow up on.
Yeah, maybe put him in touch. One of the worst things is not knowing when you're ever going to get out, I felt. Because I was fighting the case for 26 months in Arizona, facing a maximum 200 years. They had us a serious drug offender status. I was at the point where, fuck, rest of my life, and I'm just going to slash my wrist, you know? So to be sentenced to IPP and never know when you're getting out, that would just fuck your head right up, I reckon.
Yeah.
Same with Broadmoor and Parkhurst. They don't know when they're going to get out.
No, of course not.
It takes two doctor's signatures, otherwise you're in there.
Really?
Yeah. You haven't got a date.
Because you've got some people acting crazy, haven't you, thinking they're going to get, like...
Well, that's the worst. So when you get people who act like it to get there because they think they've got a cushy number, they don't realise that it's a lot of... It might be there and then, but you could be there 30 fucking years from now, you know what I mean? Mm. And by the time you've took all the pills they're giving you and that, you acting, you've turned that way.
I had a cellmate who was doing the acting. He was going around with schizophrenes, and in the court, he was like yelling, "I want to suck off the judge." All in hard time. Free to download at my website.
So my dad, he got out of the army because of he couldn't take discipline.
No,
and he kept whacking like the officers and sergeants and whatever, and he kept spending all the time in a glass house, what they called it. So that's what he'd done. He pretended he was hearing voices. And instead of getting a big lump of bird, he got chucked out dishonourable discharge. He'd done 6 months or whatever in there. But,
yeah. I can imagine a Sergeant Major getting up in your dad's face, shouting at him. He'd just get whacked, wouldn't he, there, bam, and bang.
Bam. All right, so next thing that Jamie sent in is... When your dad got out after his 18-year sentence, he began a career of unlicensed boxing. His first fight was against the unbeaten king of the gypsies, Donnie the Bull Adams. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it started off when he actually got out. He was short of money, so he was going to the gypsy fairs, and he was doing the bare knuckle fighting. And it was like, he say he was earning good money doing that.
Yeah.
But Donnie Adams was the king of the gypsies. So the fight was put together. First of all, it was put down as a fight to the death. So the media actually got hold of this. And, it went countrywide, all over the news. All
sell tickets, weren't it?
Yeah. All the news channel, the newspapers, everything, BBC, ITV. I was all over it, and it was going to be on a farm in a tent. So me and my sister, we turned up there, we got interviewed on the telly and that, but the fight was called off because they wouldn't let it go. So it went. So what they, because it was going to be bare knuckle. So what they done, they re-advertised it as like with gloves. But what I was going to do, if it went past the first round, I was all the boys were going to get round, lock their arms, keep the old bull out, the gloves would come off.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they'll have a proper tear up with no gloves on. We didn't come to that. He stopped Donnie Adams in about 30 seconds. Yeah. He was that frustrated. He hit him two or three times. He went over. And he was that frustrated. He kept picking him up come and get up and hit him again. So it was quite an experience. You know.
Did you... seeing your dad, did he have a fiery temper? Not towards you, but in the house, was he like a different person?
No, he had a fiery temperature. I remember one time, him and my mum was around, so I can't stop, because your mum is protective. So,
yeah.
What are you doing? Like, he said, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I think I was about 12, 13. I said, what are you going to do? I said, I'll eat you with that rolling pin. So he's picked the rolling pin and he starts smashing himself around the head with it.
Fuck hell.
He's like, you're going to hit me harder than that.
I locked myself in my bedroom.
Night.
Love you, Dad.
The fights he had then, were a lot of the people, his opponents, hospitalised afterwards?
No, it's like any boxing fight. You know, if it's well managed and you've got medical staff there, I suppose it was, you know. I remember St John's Ambulance being there.
Yeah.
No, it's like they had gloves on. You know, it's just the same as any amateur boxing fight or professional boxing fight.
Yeah.
You know, people that, you know, it's not the first time they've put the gloves on. So, you know, they're all experts in what they was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps it was Sykes then who, I think some American came over and he ended up in hospital for about a month after that fight. All right, then. So we know Ron Roy and Lenny McLean weren't on each other's Christmas card lists, but they did have three infamous battles. What was the beef between them about? Did both of them make each other's names?
Well, making each other's names. My dad was already like well known. Before the Lenny fights, he'd had several fights that were all, you know, been like monitored by the media and everything else. You know, those all well covered. The first fight, it was just another opponent for my dad, and my dad beat him. Second fight, my dad said he took some ginseng or whatever, but you can't have an excuse. Lenny hit him with some great punches and stopped him. And it's same in the third fight. But, you know, third fight, I think my dad took about 35 punches that he had, you know, before he went down. You know, you can't take that away from him. But, yeah, there wasn't... I think that was a big thing for my dad, you know, for his pride, you know, for actually losing and not being able to, like, bring it back from that. But, you know, life goes on. I think he got over it in the end, but...
People watching this are going to be like, where can we see these fights?
Well, there's the first one, that's gone missing. That's never to be seen again.
That's a shame.
But the two with Lenny beating... Like with Lenny beating Roy, they're easily available on YouTube.
We'll put the link to that YouTube stuff in the description box below the video, so if you want to check that out. Roy was a close friend of the Cray twins, Ronnie and Reggie. How did he find them two, and did he have much business dealings with them?
The paths crossed, obviously, like during the East End, like in the 60s. They never trod on each other's toes. There was a story what my dad told me about him and a fella called Dickie Sullivan. They had a bit of a shootout with him over one of like the Cray's associates, but I think they all kissed and made up after that. My dad used to send them money while they was in prison and that sort of thing, and they kept in touch. He went to their funerals and whatever.
Respect thing in it between all of them around, really. Mm.
Are you able to describe the circumstances of the shootout?
Well, I can, but there's something in a book. but it's basically one of the Cray's henchmen pulled a gun out on my dad and slapped him with it. Slapped him with a gun. So then it all kicked off from there.
Yeah. And if people want to find the book, what's it called?
We haven't written it yet.
Oh, you haven't written it yet? Nah. Jamie's writing it for you.
Gotcha. That'll be out in the new year.
All right, so we can add that back into this when it's published.
Yeah,
no problem. When Roy retired from his fighting, he then became a legitimate businessman, which saw him become a multimillionaire. How did he learn to be so shrewd buying and selling property?
Well, he didn't. He had some good people around him who pointed him in the right direction. And, you know, he was a clever man. But it worked both ways. It's people who do him favours and point him in the right way and he'll do them favours.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it works.
House prices were cheap back then.
Yeah, but I remember he bought this huge, it's an old people's home now, huge mansion type place in Upminster. I think it had about 30 bedrooms.
Bloody hell.
And I think he gave about 50 or 60 grand for it because it came up with the right price, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm talking, this was 1980, 81. You know, but it's over. And he he sold it for a fortune and bought more properties, built a, you know.
Because look at Sykes, how he ended up, and you hear a lot of people, they don't know how to invest the money, or they get ripped off, don't they?
Well, there's a lot of the clever villains are the ones you don't know.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you're going to talk about stuff, you're going to get caught, aren't you?
Yeah.
If you're going to boast about stuff, you get caught. You know, I know some horrible, nasty, proper villains, you know, but you wouldn't know because, you know, because they keep to themselves to themselves. You know,
half the old school ones are in Marbella places, aren't they, anyway?
Yeah.
If you look at Roy Shaw, he's exactly what he says on the tin in the small print. A scary-looking man with a dark sense of humour. Have you got any more funny stories about him?
He used to have his party tricks. He used to eat glasses. He'll pick up a wine glass, a beer glass, and he'll eat it.
Yours biting the top off was a good one. He ate the glass.
Oh, he used to eat the glass. Yeah, he used to eat it right down to the stem. Yeah, and he never used to cut his mouth on nothing. Occasionally, he'll have a little, you know, but yeah, and he used to swallow it and everything.
Just swallow it.
Yeah, I tried it once. Just you tried to emulate him. Tried it once, and I didn't like the taste of it. That's for sure. Swallowing my own blood.
Swallowed it.
Well, I'd go, I swallowed my own blood more than anything, but...
You ever try that?
No, I have not. You hear people in the prisons and that, they'll get a bit of glass and they'll crush it up and crush it up and crush it up. And that's how they try and kill people.
Yeah. Yeah, in the digestive system.
Yeah.
Wildman's party tricks was he'd let people taser him. He used to laugh. I just say, anyone just hit me as hard as you want in the face.
I wouldn't have said that to your dad, though.
Roy was never there.
Yeah, I was always around women.
And one came up to me one day and said, that's nothing, I tasered my pussy. And she grabbed the taser off him and tasered a clip right in front of us. Yep.
Jesus.
Is it fair to say Roy was a ladies' man?
Yeah, but he was very shy. He was a very shy man. He wasn't comfortable around women initially. But after he had a few vodkas or whatever, he started getting chatty and, you know.
Yeah.
He came out of himself. But if he hadn't been drinking, he was very shy and very, like, reserved.
I imagine that... it must have gone around the block about his size as well in the...
Well, yeah. Well, that's what he used to do. He wouldn't do it to strangers or whatever. But he'd pull his willy out the top of his trousers, and he didn't smoke, but he'd put a cigarette in it. And he'd stand up there, and he'd go like who in the company, and he'd go, "Have you got a light?" And they go, "Oh." And he's just hanging there like.
That's funny.
Wow. Roy wasn't so much a debt collector, but he would get asked to do things for money if people had been had over, or if Roy says it like a liberty had been taken. Did he do a lot of that kind of work?
Well, just for argument's sake, if you went up to him and said, "Look, Roy, someone's had me over for $5,000, and you know, can you sort it out for me?" He'd go, "Get the $5,000 back, and he'll keep the $5,000." But then he'll used to say, "Well, you know, I've got your back. Like, you know, if it any comebacks on it, I've got your back." But, you know, they've saved face and he's got $5,000.
So the people, when they sent him on that mission, did they know that would be the end result, or did they think they were going to get something back?
They were going to get something back, I suppose.
I think he made it quite clear.
Yeah, I'm keeping it.
Yeah.
He'd make it quite clear.
Yeah. So then at least they weren't getting punked. Yeah.
Well, they got said they saved the face, and your dad got paid for it. That's fair. That.
No, my dad was very strange with money. Now you could go out of him, and you wouldn't put your hand in your pocket. He'd buy your drinks and he'd buy your food. He'd do everything for you. But if you borrowed a pound off of him, he'd hunt you down for that pound.
Half pound.
Yeah. If he thinks you borrowed a pound off him, he wants that pound back.
Taking liberties.
Yeah, I. It was after one Christmas, and I had a job to do, and I'd done all my money Christmas, and it was quite a big job, and I needed a bit of like money for materials.
Yeah.
So I can't remember. I think it was about 1,500 quid. So I said, "Like, can you lend me 1,500 quid for these materials?" He said, "Yeah, but I want 2 grand back." Yeah. So my sister lent it to me.
Yeah. Is he being serious?
Yeah. Yeah. But his idea, if you're earning out of it, he wants to earn out of it.
Fair enough, I suppose.
Wow, strict. Would you say your dad was an expert at violence? He fought for so much for his life.
Yeah, he was definitely an expert.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely an expert.
So does that come from military training as well then?
No.
Just his natural ability?
No, he was just like brought up on the streets. He was an animal. He was brought up in an era where everyone fought with their hands.
Fights of the cobbles.
Don't get me wrong. He's used koshes and whatever, but sometimes you have to. In his line of people he was mixing with and whatever.
I think particularly the American viewers will be fascinated about that era. What else did your parents tell you about that era for them growing up?
Say that again, Sean.
The people in America are probably interested about London during the era your parents grew up. Was that like the wartime stuff? What did your parents tell you about the growing up during that era?
Well, it was post Second World War, so
okay. Bombed out then.
Yeah, it was post Second World War, and everything was rationed, wasn't it? Yeah, still with rations, and everything was like in short supply.
Yeah.
So to be able to get out and get stuff, steal stuff, or whatever, you know, work for it, or you know, you just done it.
Just raw survival.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah.
What part of London was that then?
Yeah, it was Stepney.
Stepney.
Yeah, East London. Yeah.
Imagine having to queue up for like some flour and butter and.
Yeah.
Mad, isn't it? And what did actually do that would make with
it? It was like that the other week, wasn't it? I really lost.
Yeah, exactly. It was.
Couldn't get flour. Yeah.
We got a little taste of it, didn't we?
Toilet paper.
In America, they ran out of toilet paper and guns.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Didn't
I didn't get time to do all that toilet paper. I used to get free toilet paper. I'd go to Morrison's and ask them when you go in the toilets, oh, they have the big toilet paper.
Yeah.
Just rip it off, fucking put it in your bag. The big old roll, I know what I mean.
I'm rubbing shoulders with the wrong people.
So, we just interviewed Joe Pyle Jr. Roy was close to Joe Pyle Sr. Any stories of his association with Joe Pyle Sr. or any other crime figures we've not talked about?
Don't know. They was very close. Joe and my dad. It broke my heart when Joe died. It broke my dad's heart. And I think that was because my nan died also around about the same time.
Yeah.
And that was the start of him going downhill. You know. So, but yeah, no. Joe done a lot of things to help my dad out, especially getting him out of Broadmoor and things like that. He took Joe Louis down to visit my dad. You know, he done a lot for me then.
For people who don't know who Joe Pyle Sr. is, how did his relationship with Roy come about? And, you know, who was he? Do you want to just explain to the viewers?
Well, Joe was an old-time gangster, basically. He was involved with a few American families, like Mafia and that. But basically, through the 60s and 70s, like through the Crays, Richardsons and whatever, they all worked together. Yeah, and that's how they got to know each other.
Yeah. Roy began getting ill around 2007 and suffered for the last 5 years of his life. I know this is different, but what's the full story for those who don't know Roy? I've read that the people around him who were supposed to be his friends even stole off him in the end. Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's fact, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he got head over for a lot of money by one woman.
Yeah.
And as I said to you, if you borrowed £1 off of him, usually, you know, he'd hunt you for it. But he just couldn't remember nothing, didn't know what was going on. People coming around his house, knocking on his door, selling him flowers, like a box of flowers for like 80 quid, 100 quid for like 2 quid worth of flowers.
Yeah.
But he didn't know. He didn't know what was going on.
Jesus.
You know? That's second liberty, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and it's people. If you didn't know, if he didn't know you, you'd knock on his door, he'd invite you in. Oh, yeah. You're coming, and all his photographs went missing, all sorts of things.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, you know, I live in Lincolnshire.
Yeah.
It's about 130 miles away. So, you know, my sister took loads, she had loads of pressure on her because she had to do most of it. You know, I got down and done what I could when I could.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, what goes around comes around to a lot of these people. Yeah, they're not there
of
now,
course, so. Yeah.
It's fucking heartbreaking to hear that. How should Roy be remembered? What kind of legacy did he leave?
Well, he was the pioneer of unlicensed boxing, really, in this country from the '70s up till now. It's still going. It's still being talked about. His fights are, you know, they're legendary now.
So he was the governor.
Sorry,
he was the governor.
He was at the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Now there's a governor title now. I don't know who they are or whatever, but it's not the same.
No, we had one on not long ago, some guy called Heckey. He said he's the governor. And we had another, Gary Furby, on. He said he's the governor. How many governors can there be, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's some drama over that title, isn't there? All right, so with Jamie Boyle, best-selling author, we've had on the podcast a few times, you did a book called Mean Machine.
Yeah.
So what's that about?
Well, basically, that was an insight into his life story, my dad. It put a few things straight, truths of what other books have put out, what ain't true. So, you know, so basically that was the reason why we brought that out. We brought it out pretty quick, but now we've got the time and the inclination to put a book together properly. With so more information.
What untruths were circulating that you corrected?
Well, it's just certain things of what weren't reading right. You know, people can make up their own mind. If they read both books.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Couldn't you sue them other books for being liable?
Well, no, because it was all signed off by my dad. So.
Ah, right,
you
right, right.
Mm. You know, there's nothing libelous about it. It's just it was exaggerated in some points. Now, there was one point where my dad threw someone off a balcony. Now, he said second story balcony. But basically what it was a balcony and I wouldn't want to be thrown off of it. But the drop from the top of the balcony to the ground, because it was underneath it was built up bank, was about 5 foot. So, you know, because I used to jump off it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, he bashed this fella up and threw him over it, you know. I mean, I remember coming home from school and there was blood everywhere, but...
So there wasn't like a 100-foot drop or anything?
Nah.
The new book is going to be called The Lost Tapes.
No, I don't know. I think it's going to be called True Stories.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything... I know you don't want to reveal too much, but can you just give a little teaser on what people can expect in that?
Basically, yeah, there's a bit of insight in like for the Craze Gang and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The falling outs and a bit of his army career.
Yeah.
Being in a glass house or strongbox, whatever they called it.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So, you know, there's a good few stories on there.
When it's out, buy the book and you'll get the whole proper stories.
Did he ever tell you what motivated him to join the army?
Yeah, national service.
The letter.
So that's questions that Jamie sent in, Gary. So we need to get onto your story now.
No, I ain't got one.
You ain't got one? All right, so for growing up for you then, you know, having this huge figure and realising he was in this life of crime... Did that normalise that lifestyle to you?
Yeah. Yes, because, well, I was... So, me and my sister grew up, we was little rascals. We was out shoplifting. We didn't know. We never had no toys.
Yeah.
Like my dad was working for the Queen. We had nothing, we had no money, so if I wanted toys, I'd go and take some from the shop. Boom.
If your dad was out, would he have said anything about you, like, robbing?
Probably, yeah. Oh, yeah, but the thing is, I got nicked for, all the 80s, I got nicked for fighting all the time, just fighting, getting put in prison for fighting. And he got hold of me. This was about 83, 84. And he sat me down. He said, look, if you want to, what's the point of doing all this bird for nothing? You're getting nothing out of it. But he said, if you want to like go into a life of crime or whatever, he said, I'll set you up with a little firm. You go out, do your blags. You know, and you choose what life you want or get a trade.
But a one-up percentage.
He said, get a trade. He said, because now, this day and age, everyone's a grass. And they've got all this, everywhere's cameras, everything now.
He's not wrong.
So he said, you know, so I took his advice. I've got a trade. I got City and Gills in Brook Lane in Nick. And carried on from there.
What was it like in school for you?
I didn't go that much. It was hard. School was hard because I had nothing. It was scruffy little kids. You know, I got bullied as well to start with, but you know.
Was it a prominent white school or black school?
White. Yeah, but I say the one of the like kid who I grew up with, David, he was black. He was the only black kid in the school.
Yeah,
David and Debbie. But you know, no was our closest friends. You know, but as I say, because my mum was Maltese. Now she looked Indian. So I used to get called Packy and everything. I suffered racial abuse and whatever. You know what I mean? So,
what was your favourite food, like Maltese, like a typical Maltese dish?
Oh no, it's cheesecakes.
Pastizzi.
Yeah, it's like a ricotta cheese in a flaky pastry. Lovely. And bigilla. It's like a hummus paste that with biscuits. It's nice.
Very healthy stuff, isn't it?
Not really. Not really. No, you wouldn't believe it. Rabbit as well. Like a bit of rabbit.
I've never had rabbit.
Peter was in Mexico for a bit. Got started to like the Mexican, didn't you?
Yeah.
So I had Mexican food. Or... Mm. Do you like that?
I love hot food.
Yeah. I like the spices. Yeah.
Yeah. I grow my own chilies.
Like, oh, do you? Yeah,
jalapeno. Habaneros. And that sort of thing, yeah.
But even at breakfast, you'd have eggs and chilies and so for breakfast time, you wouldn't think about having it now, you know what I mean?
On the cheese on toast, peppers, yeah. Hot peppers.
Yeah. Eggs rancho.
What was your first arrest?
First arrest, shoplifting.
Shoplifting?
No, actually, my first time I was in a police car.
Yeah.
You ain't gonna believe it, I was four.
Four?
Yes.
For what?
I robbed a church poor box. Me and my mate Chrissy Curtis. It lasted at school. Went in the church. Nothing was locked up. Then went in the church. We took all the rosary beads and a poor box. And the old Bill were called. And he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm poor. I took the poor box. You don't know. He's just the way he was.
Yeah.
You know? And then I had to be a... Because I started at school, I had to be an altar boy as my penance all the time I was there.
Yeah, did you dodge the priests?
Yeah, well, not what I can remember. I've blanked that bit out of my life.
Yeah, I was an altar boy, I didn't last long, I didn't like the vibe.
No.
I thought it was too sacrilegious to rob the box, though.
that was the first time. Then I got arrested for shoplifting. I had a bag full of toys, and I got caught. I see some kid grass me up who was looking through the window in Debenhams. And all because I went back, and I don't remember. Do you remember Andrew's Liver Salts?
Andrew's Liver Salts?
I was 10. And I went and thought, because it's fizzy.
Like Alka-Seltzer?
Yeah, yeah. Andrew's yeah. And I took a tin of that. I nicked a tin of that. And that's what got me caught. All because I like the fizziness of it.
Was that the kind of shoplifter where they just drive you home and tell your parents?
No, well, I got taken to the station and that. Mum called down. Mum was called down. Got caution for that. Then... I got nicked for burglary. That went to court. I think I was 10, 11 then. That was with a famous comedian's sons. We all got caught and boom.
Were they putting you through the window, having you open the doors and stuff because you were still so young? Or?
No, they stuck us in a cell or whatever. You know, to try to scare you a bit, it don't work, does it?
Yeah. So did you know a lot of people in there? at that age? Were you still like the family name protected you?
Nah.
No?
Nah, nah, not at all.
Yeah. So was it intimidating for you?
Everything, life's intimidating, isn't it? It's, you know, yeah. There's always, don't matter how confident you are, there's always something that's going to intimidate you.
Yeah.
You know, it's how you deal with it.
How did you deal with it in Young Offenders?
I never done Ballstall. I never done I went straight into YP.
Yeah.
Usually you do the detention centre and Ballstall, but for some reason they didn't want to send me there, so they just get straight away YP.
Yeah.
Got 12 months YP first one. Chelmsford, horrible place.
Was it cells or dorms?
Cells.
Cells.
Yeah, cells.
How many in a cell?
That time it was two.
Two.
Yeah. Then I got out from that. I went into Ashford Remand, and I had a bit of an incident with a cellmate. And then they just after that, I was banged up on my own.
What was the incident over?
He kept shouting out the window. So.
Told him to shut the fuck up.
Oh yeah, sort of, yeah.
And then it escalated. Did you have to go to like a lockdown then, as like a punishment cell for that?
No, because I couldn't prove nothing, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking back now. I'll tell you off camera, but I'm not going to say nothing on camera because I don't want to incriminate myself.
Yeah, of course. Did you make alliances with people in the?
Well, no, I made some good friends who I'm still in contact with now.
Yeah.
You know.
You feel bonded for life, don't you, with people when you go in situations like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then again, there's some people you see in there you never want to see again.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Especially you feel bonded for life, but mm-hmm. I've met people and like, we'll definitely stay in touch. And apart from what I've noticed, you never fucking do. You just get out and get on with your life, you know what I mean? Mm.
Some people want to put it behind them. And some people at the gate, they're like, yeah, I'll stay in touch. I'll send you some money on your books. I'll send you some books to read. And then you don't hear them until 6 months later when they're right back in for fucking drugs. There is a range, yeah. So, like, in America, it's all racial gangs.
Yeah, that's frightening, that is.
Did you get... I mean, you look white. Did you get discriminated against because of the Maltese?
No. When I was a kid... Because my mum, I just get caught packing a little bit and whatever.
Yeah.
My sister's a lot darker than me, so.
Yeah. But
no, racism wasn't that bad. You know?
It's not even now. I mean, whites and blacks and everything sit together, though.
Yeah, yeah. So, prison movies like Scum that we used to watch, was it a bit like that back then?
It was all slopping out and that. And what,
yeah, you know, it's nasty, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, having to piss in a pot and whatever. And then if you was banged up with you got some dirty pig that I wanted to take a crap in a pot, that was it, then you end up scrapping with them. Mm. Yeah, that's it.
Did you miss the slopping out? Were you in when it was slopping out?
Well, I was there in 92, slopping out.
92.
Well, already told you about this. It's already in the podcast there.
Yeah.
92?
Yeah.
So, what's...
He looks young, doesn't he?
Yeah, last time I was slopping out was about 82, 83.
In Walton, when we went to Walton on my 21st birthday, it put us on H-Wing, it was the introduction wing, and then they put me on a wing, and for 3 months they had me on that wing, and it was a slop out, piss of shit in the bucket, but it was unwritten code, you didn't have a fucking shit, you know what I mean? Shower once a week, and then after that, they got some other wings out, B wing, where it was more of a newer wing, and you'd go there and it was completely different, because you'd walk in, they'd have like their own shower and the toilet, and it was like an en suite, all in one type of thing, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And coming from Flop Out, it was fucking brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's right. So I went from Chelmsford, which was slopping out.
Yeah.
To stay up in Scrubs for a few days, slopping out, and then Glen Parva, single cell, toilet and sink in your cell, lovely. Yeah. And it was one of the first prisons in the country to have it. It was nice.
You can't get better than your own cell, can you?
Nah. And then, then 84, 85, Rochester. You're still slotting out in Rochester. And then off to Warren Hill, toilet and sink in your cell, single cells. Nice.
You find some of the, like, the Cat B's and Cat A's, that's like the old school ones, like Walton, Bellini at the time. They were all slop outs. And then they changed. I did Accrington, Morpeth, and literally, you might as well have had your own key there. They left the key in the fucking door. Lovely, nice greenery, nice grass, nice everything. Billets. It was nice. And then I went to Home House. Finished off at Home House, Stockton on Tees. But, I thought it was hard at the time. But when I got me 8 years in America and I did 7.5 out of 8, it was like, fucking hell. Come back, Walton.
Most I got was 18 months.
Yeah.
You know, and because of remind time, I only done 8 months out of that.
Yeah, you did.
Because I was on bail for one. I was on one, and all the commemorate work, but all the bail and everything, and all the time I spent on remand for the other offence, come off of that offence. I got my early state release in Rochester, and it was like a year down the line or whatever. And then when I got into Warren Hill, I kept my mouth. I can't believe it. I think it was like I was going to do like 7-8 months out of it. You know, it's like four months off of it. So I kept my mouth shut thinking they're going to find out. But they opened the gate and let me out.
If you sit on remand for 6 months, you'd end up, you've actually done a 12-month sentence, haven't you?
Well, yeah, but so it worked. I didn't realise at the time that it worked on both, like, because I was on bail for one, but putting in remand for both offences. Because I breached my bail, I didn't realise that I came off of that sentence, if you understand.
Ah, right, I just thought it was bail for one sentence, remand for one sentence, and it just a one.
Mm.
Ah, being all right then, you know what I mean? Mm. Two for one there then, isn't it?
So when you finished that first sentence, what was life like for you after that?
I was out about a month, then I got out for Christmas, I think it was, and straight back in again, straight after Christmas. And the same again the year after. So,
just in and out, in and out.
Yeah, but then you realise, it don't matter how young and stupid you are. Nobody can be that stupid that you're going to keep doing it. You know, if you want to, you know, lucky enough, my dad and my mum had words with me, and you know, so you know, I had some good people around me. You know,
what advice did your dad give you?
As I said to him, he said, like, get a trade. Go to work.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah.
So, what was the year you went in and what was the final year you came out?
I'd done a sentence in 82, 83, and 84.
84.
Got out in 85.
So, did the prisons, you described how you went down to a single cell by the end. And in your head, were you thinking, right, this isn't the lifestyle for me?
Well, as soon as you go in there, you realise it ain't a lifestyle for you. But, you know, you shut off and then you just get on with, you forget about everything else. You forget about the outside.
Yeah.
I'm not a criminal. You know, I don't like prison. I don't glamorise prison. Prisons, you know, is I don't know what it's like now, but, you know, I went to visit my nephew. He was on remand. And I said about, like, sticking up shirt in bail. He said, I don't want to come out. I don't want bail because I lose me PlayStation privileges or whatever. You know.
They got it like a hotel now. It's like, I mean, they could be fucking not getting much food on the streets, but now they're guaranteed three hots and a cot, and they've got the PlayStation.
I see where he's coming from because he would have been out like for 2-4 weeks and then he's got to go back in again. You know, yeah. I understand that part of it, but... You know, but now they've got tellies and... When I was there, you never had a phone. You never had a phone like on a landing or whatever like they've got now. You know, you had none of that. So, you know, the only way you kept in contact with your family was you got one letter a week and then you had to buy the rest. You know, your half ounce or quarter ounce of tobacco.
So what was life like for you then in your 20s?
It was hard, you know, just went to work, bought a house, carried on just like that, had a family.
When your dad visited you in the prison, did like word spread throughout the prisoners that he was there in like visitation and stuff?
I can't, honestly can't remember, Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
I just can't remember.
Yeah.
Now we had a, I can't remember what year it was, but he was away for a, he bit of road rage, he whacked some fella. And I was away at the same time, we managed to get a prison visit. So, yeah, they took me down to the scrubs, I see him, and just, it was just day out.
So, how is life for you now?
It's all right.
It's all right.
Yeah, I'm enjoying life. Yeah. This coronavirus thing, that's a bit of an obstacle at the minute, but
yeah.
I think it's as good as gone now, mate.
Well, I don't want to put my comments on it. I'll come through as some kind of nut.
Oh, I've heard the type of comment I've heard. It's a government conspiracy, right down to everything. It's like, you know, but.
I think it is lack of faith now for the government, because we got through the worst of it. We got through everything, and now they want you to wear a mask after everything else.
They don't know what the fuck they're on about. At first said you don't need the mask. The mask's no good anyway. It won't do nothing at all. And then it was like 2 metres, and now it's 1 metre, put your mask on. And it's like, I mean, fucking hell, you see that, like, people at the nightclubs, these younger people now, there ain't no social distancing and fuck all, you know what I mean?
Was it, you can only have six people in your house now, right? But you can have six people in your house, but then you can go down a pub, have a beer with another five people.
Yeah.
Then down the nightclub with another six people, five people, and have a beer with them. So now you've been in contact with like 15, 18 people, you know?
The world's gone mad. How did you hook up with Jamie Boyle?
Through Facebook, basically.
Through Facebook.
Yeah, Jamie's a nice fella. I've got a lot of time with Jamie.
Yeah.
He's taken a lot of stick from a lot of jealous people, basically. But
yeah, everyone gets under that troll attack bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's got thick skin. So.
Good.
A lot of good lads down there. I like Steve Rave too.
Yeah, yeah, we're working with both Jamie and Steve Rafe on various projects, and they've both been on the podcast.
Yeah, I've met Steve a few times.
Yeah.
So is there anything you'd like to say to the people watching this? We've got like a lot of young viewers who, you know, they're tempted into crime and stuff like that. We'd like to have a social message to people watching this not to go down these roads.
Yeah, no, crime's a mug's game, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you can't get away with nothing now, you know. Yeah. Unless you're clever with a computer, and I don't recommend that either. But
yeah,
yeah. I mean, there's no point. It's like I used to love growing up. I used to like love the football violence and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, as soon as the CCTV cameras come up and everything, it's a fucking mugs game. Mm. You can't do anything. And these people with phones too. You can get into a beef with someone, and someone's like, "Hey, look at that over there! Fucking hell, they just got your nick." You know what I mean? Big shout out to Brad Cockrell, by the way.
Yeah, as I say, cameras and whatever, you can't get away with nothing.
No, you can't get away with nothing. No, I think always at the time, I used to think you'd hear people doing white collar crime, and you thought, well, if it was intelligent enough, that's what it would do. You know, you made a couple of million, and you're getting out to that as well.
Yeah, I would never do anything like that, though.
There ain't no honour no more, though, is it? There ain't no honour.
No, there ain't no honour. Used to be. No.
You know, everyone used to have manners and whatever. But now, if someone gets pulled in by the old bill, they're giving names out left, right, and center.
Fucking heroin addicts. They'll just fucking sing for three and you get the sentence knocked off.
Again, a lot of it's to do with the war on drugs, isn't it? It's like a fucking pyramid scheme for the police. Going to get this guy, get this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy.
We had a copper on the other day, and he was actually saying it was true. He was saying that, you know, you'd tease him with a bag of heroin, when you'd get it what you want, and back in the day, you'd let him have a little bit, and then make him fucking withdraw again, and just get a few more. And he said you'd end up getting like 6 months, 12 months worth of burglaries, all there and then. They've admitted to fucking everything, you know what I mean?
Are there any stories that you think you might have left out of this interview that you want to say, or anything you'd like to say before we finish?
He wants to keep it for his book.
Well, the biggest story is the day that I got up past five and drove down there and I'm shattered. I should have done the afternoon shift, because then I wouldn't be so tired.
Was it like driving? Was it, it's a lot, see a lot of people with the COVID, or is it? Is there still a lot of people out?
No, but the roads were busy, yeah.
Yeah.
But mind you, coming into Manchester, it's always busy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, coming through like that M62. But, you know, I think the best way is road out of it, isn't it? back to Lincolnshire for me.
Yeah. Lincolnshire.
Yeah, got a nice little farm down there. So.
Is it quaint though, yeah?
It's lovely, yeah. Yeah.
What are they famous for, Lincolnshire? Sausages, isn't it? And cheese.
Cabbages, mainly.
Cabbage?
Yeah, loads of cabbages where I am. Jesus.
I don't mind cabbage, me. Cabbage is some sports.
Yeah, sausage. You've got Lincolnshire sausages in there.
Yeah. I watched a show called Hurry Bikers, and they go around everywhere. Yeah. And they were out Lincolnshire not long ago. They do like all the local recipes they do there. So when you say you've got a farm, is it an active farm with cows and pigs? And...
I've got it to grass now. It's only 12 acres. I've got chickens and whatever.
You mean it's grass the green kind?
Yeah. Not the cannabis kind.
No. Yeah, it's not the cannabis kind. not the things the cows eat.
We're building stables there. We're going to do it as a livery yard, that sort of thing.
Well.
Yeah, sure.
They make a lot of money out of like the old stables and all the sandstone buildings up here now. They convert them into like yuppie flats and they get a fucking hell of a lot of fucking money for them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I've been up there since 2001. And it was the best thing I ever done, getting away from that rat race down south. You know, and I hate to say it, but the actual people are lovely. As soon as you get past Watford, attitudes change, people are nice.
So you have like a little local booze you go to and you settled in there.
It's funny because when I moved up there, me and my son, we walked around the corner to the local pub and I knew the fella behind the bar. He used to have West End work in Man's Club. And there was a few other people who I knew up there and that. So,
it,
you know.
Small world, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, you go up there to get out of the way of things and then.
Yeah.
But they'd all done the same thing. They'd all gone up there to get out of the way.
It's a healthier way of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
He calls me the robot because I'm always like working at a fast pace. He says I need to go out to Wales and just having like a nice holiday in the countryside. Oh. Yeah.
Other places available, lakes.
Yeah. No, that's all I do. I just love going on holiday now. Go on holiday. Something to work for, isn't it? Yeah.
Where's your favourite overseas places to go on holiday?
Well, I got a place in Malta. What I go to quite a bit. Well, I'm supposed to be going. It's supposed to be there 2-3 times already the last couple of months, but it's been cancelled because of this COVID thing. So,
yeah,
I'm usually out there all summer, but you know, obviously this year's different.
How hot does it get in the summer there?
Oh God, well, 34, 35, 36.
Yeah,
it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Long as you can keep your beer cold.
What's the local beer they have there?
Chisk. Obviously you get English beers in it there. You know, that's my favourite. Yeah.
I always go, wherever I'm going, I'll drink there. I mean, there's no point wherever you go and say, I'll have a...
Yeah, Carlin.
Yeah, I'll have a Carlin or I'll have a, whatever, an English beer. Stella Artois. I know it's not English, but like, all the young lads like drinking.
Yeah, I don't mind a bit of Stella.
No. I used to like Newcastle Brown Ale. It's not even that strong, but it seems to get you drunk.
No, I like Guinness, but you can't. Yeah. You've got to pay through the nose for Guinness in Malta, but over here, that's all I drink. Guinness, you know, lovely.
Even some of the Ponty places down south now, they'll put like a fucking shamrock on it, but charge you a tenner for a fucking pipe. I'd rather have one without the shamrock for a fiver, please. You know what I mean?
But mind you, I nearly fell off. I went downstairs, got coffee downstairs. Nice girl in there, done me a lovely coffee. But I looked at the menu, £10 for a full English breakfast.
The organic here?
Yeah.
And I was saying, he thinks it's cheap. We went in there the other day, and I paid £2 for a can of Coca-Cola. Organic Coke, I don't give a fuck what it is, do you know what I mean? Coke, it's a can of fucking Coke, £2.
It'd be £5 to £10 down south.
Yeah.
I'd go fucking Aldi, get a fucking pack of 24.
Your beard in Arizona, wasn't that the snake?
King Cobra. King Cobra in Old English in Arizona, yeah.
It was almost 50 degrees, but you kept managed to keep that cool, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, you had to, didn't you? And then when I lived in Mexico, it was Dos Equis.
How long was you out there for?
I was
in, not including prison years.
Oh, in America?
Yeah.
How long did that live?
He was deported three times for being a menace to society. And we kept smuggling him back in through, like, Canada and Mexico. Oh, I was sending, like, Mission Impossible-style teams of people around the world to bring him back. Over the time, so there was the first visit was so many months that he lasted. That's the one where he ended up just living under a tree with a Rambo knife and a baseball bat with the woman who was who tasered the pussy.
All right, they're saying about me.
So he went on the rampage, like going through restaurants and just leaving without paying. So he ended up getting nicked and sent back for that one. And then it was about two years or so, I think, before he actually came back for the next one, which lasted a little bit longer. And then there was a third one. And then he went down to Mexico, came back from that. They were all so many months because they were just...
No, it was longer than months, la.
Over time, it was years, but
fucking
like...
Fucking exaggerating again. It always makes me out the enemy. I wouldn't be getting deported if it wasn't this arsehole.
That's what friends are for.
Yeah.
I was a stockbroker, settled down.
Come down, man.
Living a normal life.
I need a hand. I need you back in the country as soon as possible.
You see, that's, okay. I find that intriguing. Like you say, you had a really good career as a stockbroker.
Yeah.
And the way you fell into drugs and whatever.
Yeah.
What red dealing and whatever.
Yeah.
But then getting prison time.
Yeah.
Now, coming from like, obviously, because you've obviously grew up, brought up pretty reasonably well, weren't you?
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, just your world's turned upside down, just like that. What is it? Was it the glamour of like crime and that different lifestyle?
No fucking emotional maturity whatsoever. Seen the movies, seen the videos. I've come from witness, you know, chemical manufacturing town where I didn't have any money. In my 20s, all of a sudden, I've got a lot of money. Just goes straight to my head. Start throwing raves now with this money because the rave scene had a big influence on me in this country. That's how it started, throwing raves. In the beginning, it was just like house parties and I'm just showing off because I've got the most money, giving the drugs away. Then I start to see like the business potential of it, thinking, right, I've got to be in the office 6 a.m. Do I want to be working all these hours? Well, I could just start making money from the party scene. So greed, emotional immaturity, just wanting to just get high with my mates all the time, not thinking about the harm I'm causing society, not thinking about the nervous breakdown my mum's going to have. You know, she's flying 5,000 miles to visit me in jail, having to stand outside in the heat, in the Sonoran desert heat. And the guards, you know, they're just bringing sniffer dogs up to you and, you know, patting you down and all this stuff. And she sat there in the visitation room first time and I just see the broken look on her face.
You don't think any of that when you're actually doing the drugs and all that.
It's horrible, isn't it? Absolutely.
You actually think you're above the law, you know what I mean?
Well, basically, we're all selfish, aren't we?
Yeah.
I remember my mum coming.
We've found the likes of Sammy the Bull. Like, these are all like fucking grade A fucking Italian gangsters, you know what I mean?
So, you don't consider like people.
No, you don't think. No, you don't. No.
You're selfish.
Did it break your heart when your mum came to visit you?
Well, yeah, of course it did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my wife. You know,
yeah.
Your mum would have been used to it too, I suppose, with your dad.
I think it's different with your siblings, with your children.
It's
a different...
It's the last place she wanted you to go down that same path, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, it's a bit... I know she went through it with my dad and I was part of a product of her environment. But basically, you know, you don't realise what harm you're doing to your children. My children, they're completely different way I grew up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I've got the experience in life to how to bring them up there.
That's good.
To bring them up, I should say. You know, so.
So that's one of the messages we try and get across to the young people. Think about your mum and your family members and your loved ones.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not all glitz and glamour.
Well, it ain't all about you, is it? You know
no,
what I mean?
Exactly.
All right. If you want a pound note, go and earn it.
Yeah.
exactly. You know, instead of trying to take it.
Because if you've got a straight, they think it's fast money, but they take your money, the cops, everything, and then all those down years in prison. If you had a trade, you could have made more money to start with.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as I say now, they seize everything off you now, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Civil asset forfeiture laws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then if you ain't got a receipt for it, that's gone.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Took your pension, everything. Yeah. Right. Any more final questions?
No, I'm looking forward to your book coming out. I'll read the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, James doing all the hard work. I'm just filling in the blanks. That's the best bit about it.
He's going to do the same for Wild. He's going to come up here, spend 3 or 4 days, and get Wild Man's story out as a book as well. You looking forward to that?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
All right. So if you've watched this, then like I said before, Gary's got the Facebook page. The link is in the description box below the video. As are links to the books. We're also going to put a general link down there as well to Jamie Boyle, who's been brilliant. He's arranged a lot of these interviews for us. My publishing company's doing the audio books now for a lot of these books as well. So, great guy. Look forward to, you know, more of the guests that he's going to be bringing on. If you've enjoyed this, please let us know what you think in the comments. Huge thank you to all the new subscribers. Subscription logos in the bottom right-hand corner of the video. Huge thank you to people who've donated so we can produce these podcasts at this level in a studio with cameramen, sound engineers, and stuff like that. And again, a huge thank you to Gary for coming all this way today and coming out.
Yeah,
yeah,
problem,
yeah, really Gary, appreciate it. Yeah, cheers.
And Jamie, one last thing. Sean's just said that he's not doing any editing no more, so we won't be editing what we do. So we've got a free reign. You say you're not editing, right, Will?
Of course, lad. There's no legal read or anything. You've got full licence to just go completely uncensored.
Thank you. Good RS, lad.
Cheers. Take care. Thank you for watching.
Cheers.
Bye.